There's nothing better than sports on a Sunday.
The return to glory.
It's time to kick off.
20, he will score!
Tip off.
Way down to bang, bang!
Or tee off.
They're going to go nuts when he hits this thing.
On Sunday Huddle with Colin Russo, presented by Hard Rock Bet.
A beautiful Sunday morning, June the 8th, 2025. Happy to have you aboard. It's Sunday Huddle, presented by Hard Rock Bet on ESPN 106.3. My name is Colin Russo. Joined alongside me, Damian Perez. We're at the City Place Studios in downtown West Palm Beach on ESPN 106.3. Also streaming live on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter /X at ESPN West Palm. Next hour, got a lot to talk about. We got Pacers, Thunder Game 2 a little later on today, so we'll get into a little bit on what's going on that front. We got to talk about why the heck or how the tides have shifted. Just one game, and all of a sudden, now it's like the Pacers are leading the series, and they're all of a sudden in the driver's seat to finish it off after they were plus 600 favorites no more than 2.5 days ago. But we'll get into that 2 days in between, but that game two is tonight, ABC, 8 p.m. in Oklahoma City. We're in the midst of a classic in the French Open final on TNT with Jannik Sinner and Carlos Alcaraz. First set, 2-2 apiece, two games apiece, that is. Already 35 minutes of game time. We've only seen four games. So we'll give you updates as we see fit alongside that front. And more importantly, got to tell you about our friends over at Hard Rock Bet. You're going to be watching game two. You're going to be watching game three of the Stanley Cup. You're going to be watching all this. If you watched the Preakness, the Belmont yesterday. Because all this sports is going on right now, you might as well sprinkle a little action, have a little fun with our pals over at Hard Rock Bet. It's winner go home time in the playoffs, but not for the new customers on Hard Rock Bet. If your first bet doesn't even hit, you get a bonus bet of up to $100 to try it again. They also have Battle of the Bets. In Battle of the Bets, you can turn as little as $1 into a serious payday. Every day, over $250,000 in bonus bets are on the line, and it takes just $1 to jump in on the action. It's used as a pot, and all you got to do is choose a side, whether it's an over, an under, a point total, a win, or a loss. You choose a side on Battle of the Bets, and if your side wins, you split the bonus bets that are in the pot, and you take home your cash winnings. Thousands have already won big. You can be next. That's on Battle of the Bets on the Hard Rock Bet app. Go download today, Google Play Store, Apple App Store. You get the NBA Finals. Put as little as $1 in it. As little as $1. Increase your odds. Put together a complicated parlay if you want. It caters to both types of players. The interface caters to both. It's Hard Rock Bet offered by the Seminole Tribe of Florida. Must be 21 plus and physically present in Florida. The wager terms and conditions apply. Consider by gambling. Call 1-888-ADMINUTE. Damien, it's funny because you look at the game one of the Pacers Thunder, and going in, the Thunder not only were 10-point favorites going into the game, but series favorites. They were, what, minus 500? You want to talk about public interest in it, and the ratings were terrible. They did 8.9 million, which is the third worst since 1988 and for a game one of the NBA final. So nobody cared. But also the sports books had a wide favoring of Oklahoma City Thunder. The Pacers do what the Pacers do. They led the game for exactly a half a second, 0.3 seconds, and they were able to get back into it. But now I'm sitting here thinking, all right, well, after the Pacers have won game one, the perception on the series has totally changed. The perception on this series, the pendulum has completely altered to the other side. And now you're asking yourself the same question. Are they going to get the Oklahoma City Thunder like they surprised the Cavs, like they surprised the Knicks, even if they surprised the Bucks? Nobody expected the Bucks to fall down 2-0 with or without Lillard. Nobody expected the Cavs to fall down 2-0. Nobody expected the Knicks to fall down 2-0. But now the Thunder, the perception around this game is they're 10-point favorites. Oklahoma City is favored by 10.5 points tonight. Everybody's under the perception, oh, well, you know, the Pacers, they did it to the Knicks. They can't do it to the Thunder. And you almost feel like you're falling back into the same rabbit hole that got you here in the first place. Now, I tend to agree. That's the weird part. I think it'd be hard for Oklahoma City to fall down 2-0. I think they've done a good job at responding after bad losses this postseason, in the Denver series most notably. But this is what Indiana has done. And the Thunder are also victims to the same crime. It's surprising how much the perception of this entire series changed because one man hit a shot at the end of the game and Tyrese Halliburton hitting that game winner in game one. Damian, are you in the favor of the Pacers are going to do it again? Or are we being a little running away with it for a team that just led for 0.3 seconds and that this is still the Thunder's to lose?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, good morning. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah.
But, man, it's just like the Pacers are that team. They're that team where it's so tough to plan against. You don't know what to expect. And for the most part, there's a lot of similarities with both of these teams. They're very deep. They don't have that one. Well, they do have that one player, but for the most part, their style is very deep. Everybody gets involved. Halliburton does a good job of getting everybody involved. And their bench is very important to both teams. You know, Obi Toppin was huge in game one, hitting, I believe it was 5 threes, bringing Indiana back when they were basically about to just lose that game.
Right.
So it's very tough to dictate where this series is going to go after game one. You know, because going into game one, everybody thought OKC was going to win both at home. But the Pacers do what they've been doing all playoff long. They stole game one.
And they surprised people.
And they're usually really good in game two.
They
are. You can say they're ahead of schedule here.
So you think about a team like Denver, and I want to compare the Denver series with OKC versus the Pacers, how the Pacers usually play. The Denver Nuggets, in similar fashion, down 12 with about 3 minutes to go, rumbled back into the game, stole game one against the OKC Thunder, and then in game two, they lost by, 43 points? They got destroyed. But that was because Denver knows what types of games they need to win. They need to win one on the road of the first two. They need to make sure that they try to defend home court, but at least exit the series at 2-2, the first four games at 2-2. They know that they have to win their home game in game six. That, they strategically plan how hard they try because of this,
the momentum. They definitely did.
And but that's how they do it.
Looking back at it, you can say that was a mistake.
Totally.
Denver, they completely just
the goal was to make it a long series.
They wanted one game.
And hope OKC would get tight.
And they wanted that one game.
Yeah, and maybe statistically that would make sense. You want to make it a win or go home. You don't want to beat them over four. You want to get them into a game seven and trust your experience over theirs. I'm sure that was their game plan. Now, Indiana, on the other hand, Indiana, yes, has stole game one in each of the previous two series against the Cavaliers and the Knicks. And what'd they do? When everybody thought that, all right, this is not going to happen again, the Pacers went back and they honestly played better. I know that game two against the Cavs, they completely stole. That was when they were down eight and he had a free throw miss and then a 3-point game-winning shot, Halliburton, but against the Cavs. But they are willing to punch twice. They don't necessarily think, all right, well, we succeeded because we've stolen one of the two on this road game, on the road games. We've stolen one of the two, so we're good. Let's go back home and let's reset, regroup. This is not how that team operates. They're the ultimate next play, next game. We will give you 100% effort. We will not get phased throughout the entirety of the game, every game, for the entire series. That is why they are so dangerous. Because I thought that game, let's talk about game one a little bit. Pacers were flirting with that 10 to 13 point lead throughout the entirety of the game. At the end of the third quarter, they finally cut it to six. It was 82-76 after a 3-point shot with about 10 seconds remaining. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander goes to the other end of the court at the end of the third quarter and hits almost like a mouth-stuffing three. 85-76 going into the third quarter. A lot of momentum, killed the run that the Pacers had because they've been trying to get inside 10. And I thought that was more of the, all right, well, the Thunder are able to clog these runs. I think that's enough. But to the Pacers' credit, they were down at 10 points with 5 minutes to go. Time and time again, they are a next play team, a next moment team. They do not get phased. You have to beat them for 48 minutes. You have to kill them by 1,000 cuts. It is unbelievable how they stole that game one. And now you got to think about game two. This is either going to go one or two ways. Or this might be the ultimate magical run you've ever seen if they're able to go three straight road series in a row starting up 2-0.
That would be unbelievable.
That would be as unbelievable as it gets. And Rick Carlisle, of all people, you got to think about if they're able to steal this, and this is very early. We're only one game in, but I'm going to be a little hyperbolic. If they could somehow win this series, if they could somehow beat the Thunder as a 50-win four seed who knocked off a healthy 68-win team that is looking to close out a pretty historic season. You're looking at what the Pacers are doing as one of the most impressive title runs this century in basketball, at least.
Yeah, and a team who nobody expected for them to be at this position where they are. They didn't have the best start to the regular season. They were, I believe they were a fourth seed going into the playoffs, so nobody really expected the Indiana Pacers to be in the finals. But the way they've been doing it has been unbelievable. You know, Haliburton hitting those crazy shots against the Knicks, the game winners, the comebacks. I mean, they're shaping up to probably be the team of destiny here.
Right. They only have only one player. Tyrese Haliburton got an All-NBA third team nomination. That's it. Nobody else got anything else. They have a bunch of playoff risers. They go 10 deep. Rick Carlisle is a championship-winning coach. A championship-winning coach, by the way, won a championship with Dallas in 2011. That Dallas title is one of the more difficult titles, most come-from-behind titles you've ever seen. When it was J.J. Barea, I know the Miami Heat fan hates that name, the J.J. Barea, Jason Terry, Dirk Nowitzki against LeBron. They beat the Thunder that postseason run. They beat the Spurs. As impressive of a run as it ever gets, that was Carlisle. And now this is Carlisle doing it again with the Pacers, beating a 64-win Cav team, beating a Knicks team with all the momentum fresh off a Boston Celtics series win, getting the Knicks coach fired. Now you wonder about Knicks firing Thibodeau when they're doing the same, when the Pacers are for losing that series against the Pacers, when the Pacers are doing it against the Thunder. And I was pro get rid of Thibodeau. But the Pacers are doing the exact same thing to the Thunder, and the Thunder are not going to get rid of Dagnall. The Cavs are not going to get rid of Atkinson. But the Knicks got rid of Thibodeau. Makes you think a little bit. But now I'm sitting here thinking that they're in the driver's seat. The favorite is against the ropes. The Pacers can prove a whole lot tonight if they go up 2-0. If they go up 2-0, I'm very close to saying this series is over. I'd have a hard time seeing them lose 4-6. Now, the one thing I would add to that is the Thunder thoroughly outplayed the Pacers, at least in terms of taking care of the ball, for about three quarters in game one. About 3.5.
I believe it was 20 turnovers in the first half.
20 turnovers in the first half. It was a 25-7 discrepancy in the entire game.
And they won the game.
18 more turnovers. Now, they shot better and they rebounded better. And that OKC offense was brutal down the stretch. But I think we need to start talking about if the Pacers are able to pull this off. And this is a big if, and this is early to say. But one of the more impressive playoff runs we've ever seen. And people are under the impression, nobody wants to watch it. Two small market teams. No. This is the NBA doing a bad job marketing what we're watching.
And I believe that changed after game one.
Right.
Going into game one, I think the expectation was different. We're after the result after game one. Going into game two, I think the expectations have changed.
I'm very curious to see how the viewership numbers change from game one to game two. You're right. NBA Finals rarely has a game winner. Very rarely. Game one specifically are rarely within 10 points. And you had one that was a come-from-behind game-winning shot. I wonder if that spikes the public interest a little further, thinking, all right, well, this team might be able to do it. This team's got a little bit of magic. Only 8.9 million watched game one of the NBA final, which is a terrible number. It is only above 2020, which was the bubble, and 2021, which was basically a shortened COVID season. It is only ahead of those two. And that is since they started tracking in 1988. So clearly people weren't watching. Let's see if that changes for game two. Here's another problem I have. Game one was on, what, Thursday night?
Yep.
Why is it Sunday and we haven't had game two?
And not only that, why is it at 8 p.m. on a Sunday?
It just seemed like a pretty substantial misfire to have a Saturday night where there was nothing.
Now, does that work in whose favor?
That works in the Thunder's favor, I think.
Yeah, because the Pacers had that
momentum. You get to kill the run.
If you're the Pacers, you want to play the next day.
They're stuck in Oklahoma City. I think that that works with the Thunder. But there was nothing on sports last night. Nothing. There was Red Sox Yankees, which is a pretty decent game.
Coco Gauff.
Yeah, Coco Gauff was earlier in the day. That was during the day. They had the Belmont, which you watch, and then that's over and done with by 7:15. That was a prime slot to have an 7:30 or 8 o'clock game in Oklahoma City game two. Felt like that was a misfire. I don't know why they didn't do that. There's no travel day. There's no travel day. So who are you trying to accommodate here? And then I think about it, and game three is on Wednesday. We're getting three games in a 7-day period. I don't think that's bad scheduling. The game loses momentum when that happens.
It really does. And especially coming off low viewership, right. I feel like that doesn't help.
People, you want to capitalize off that. I don't understand why these games are 3 days apart. I understand in between travel days, give these guys a break when they're traveling from Oklahoma City to Indiana. I could understand if you did Saturday to Tuesday for game two to game three. I could understand that. But to make game one and game two a day and a half apart, very strange. Very strange. And then they do Wednesday to Friday between game three and game four, which is fine. And then they have a travel day back to Oklahoma City, and they have the 2 days again, and then they have the 2 days again, and then they have the 2 days again. Game seven would be June 22nd. That is 2 weeks from today. That is entirely too long. Entirely too long to play a series. That's just my opinion.
It really is. And I don't believe it was like that last year from my recollection.
It depends. They usually do it, but I don't have the numbers in front of me. But to make a series 18 days long is pretty ridiculous. That's pretty ridiculous.
I agree.
You got like you're dragged out in a sense. You're losing momentum. Mm-hmm. That's it. You're losing all the momentum. I think the NBA's done a bad job in terms of scheduling. And I understand they might like Sunday night more than Saturday night, but yeah, last night, unless you were into Red Sox Yankees, there was not a lot to watch.
They would have got all the viewership.
No competition. None. I don't understand why they didn't do that. But tonight, Damian, what do you think is going to happen?
I'll be honest. I want to jump on the Pacers bandwagon, yeah. But I just see it. I think OKC is going to respond tonight. I don't think it'll be a blowout. I wouldn't take that -10.5, I believe it is, on Hard Rock.
I would take the Pacers +10.5 tomorrow.
I would definitely take the Pacers, but I think the OKC Thunder are going to pull it off today. I just don't see them going down 2-0 at home, being a team that's been so dominant. And frankly, it's a team who, you know, Haliburton can drop 35, but they're a complete team, similar to how the Pacers are. So I just see them bouncing back. I think they're a very... that home field advantage plays a role,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, they're resilient. And they've showed you something in that Denver series, that they're very capable of responding. Even in Minnesota, they're very capable at responding after a loss.
Yeah, and I mean, also, you even said it. The Thunder were the better team against the Pacers. It really came down to two shots. The shot that Shai missed,
yep.
And then Haliburton came back and scored the game winner.
Right.
So if it wasn't for those two shots, for those two moments, you know, OKC really dominated every aspect of that game.
Right. I tend to agree. I think OKC has shown just something in terms of their guts and their resiliency in terms of responding after a loss. They did it after game three against Minnesota, where there was the whispers, oh, can Minnesota tie the series at 2-2? And then in Minnesota in game four, Gilgeous Alexander puts together a terrific game. That's when Anthony Edwards was a no-show and only had 11 total taken shots. And they were able to close out a tight one, winning by 3 or 4 points. Against in Minnesota to go up 3-1 and basically close the series.
Now to that point, I think the Pacers are a different team from the Timberwolves, whereas the Timberwolves need Anthony Edwards to have a great game. If Anthony Edwards didn't have a great... Now, I know Julius Randle had a great playoff run, but at the end of the day, Anthony Edwards is that player who kind of puts you over.
Yeah.
The Pacers are different. Haliburton doesn't need to go off for 30 in a night to win a game. So in that sense, it's different, but I still think OKC is going to tie the series tonight.
Yeah, because you think about it, and it was game two against the Knicks when they went up 2-0, where Pascal Siakam was unbelievable.
Yeah.
That's when he had about 40 points.
Neesmith as well.
Neesmith was game one.
Mm-hmm.
So they have moment. You're right. They have a crew, a band of people, different people that could hurt you at any point and that could bury you at any point.
I mean, Haliburton had what, 19 points in game one?
Yeah, no, less. 13 points, 15, 14 points, something like that?
14.
Yeah, 14 points.
6 for 13 shooting, 2 for 7 from 3.
The high for Indiana was 19 points from Siakam.
Yep.
You got to think that they might play a little bit better. We'll see. That's Damian Perez, Colin Russo. Sinner Alcaraz going on TNT right now. Sinner, we got a deuce in the 8th game. It is four games to 3 Sinner in the first set. It is 51 minutes through the match.
An absolute deadlock.
51 minutes through the match, and they've completed 7 games in the French Open. This is going to be a 5-hour.
I feel like it's been at deuce the whole entire
match.
It's going
to be a 5-hour classic tennis match. We'll give updates as the program rolls along here on ESPN 106.3. On the flip side, we got to do a little blitz to book. We got to talk about a little Aaron Rodgers going to the Pittsburgh Steelers. And we got to talk about a little Stanley Cup. We'll do all of that on the flip side. Stick around for it. It's Sunday Huddle presented by Hard Rock Bet right here on ESPN 106.3.
Near left, H2 chip, double drag, goes, halfback balloon, dummy spot call, hard 3.
This is Sunday Huddle with Colin Russo, presented by Hard Rock Bet.
Well, I had an accident getting off the couch last Sunday, tweaked my groin, and I got my half Ironman coming up 6 days from now, next Saturday.
Oh, boy.
So what I do? I called my friend Glenn Levine with Anajar and Levine, and I got organized, and he gave me a couple tips on how to handle it, and he also lent me his bike bag. So that's how I'm going to ship my bike out to Boulder, Colorado for my race on Saturday. But if you've been in a car accident, you heard it. Truck accident, suffered a slip and fall, got off the couch a little funny. My friends Mark Anajar and Glenn Levine at Anajar and Levine Accidents Attorneys are the type to fight for you. I personally know with Anajar and Levine, they got my back no matter what. They could get yours too. They don't even charge you unless you win. They work tirelessly to get you the maximum compensation that you deserve. Don't settle for just any attorney. Demand Anajar and Levine today because that's the Anajar and Levine difference. All it takes is one phone call. Take back control of your life. Call for that free consultation now. That's 1-800-747-FREE. 1-800-747-3733. Don't wait. Call for that free consultation. Take back control now with Anajar and Levine. Colin Russo, Damian Perez with you from the City Place Studios in downtown West Palm Beach. It's Sunday Huddle presented by Hard Rock Bet right here on ESPN 106.3. Also streaming on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter/X. You can check us out there and watch us there at ESPN West Palm. Well, Stanley Cup. I was at Amerant Bank Arena for game 2. No, the game was in Edmonton, but I was with the watch party with all the fans where they have it on in the Jumbotron in that arena. Number one, that was very fun, very cool. Packed, jammed, almost felt like it was a little bit more casual, you know, like sit back, relax. But when, you know, the game got tight, everybody got into it. Now, the problem was, listen, you could call me a bad fan. I followed it on the way home. After the first regulation, it was 11 o'clock-ish. I got in the car and I left. I'm going to be completely honest with you. That game went to 2 overtimes. It ended at 12:40 or whatever it did. And at 12:45. If I was in Sunrise, Florida, and I live up in West Palm, if I was in Sunrise, that would have been problematic for everybody. You know what even happened? I was able to keep track of the first overtime on the ride back because I rode back with Mike Rizzo. And then I was able to watch all of the second overtime from the comfort of my own home. I thought I handled that right because it was a cool environment, but I can't be there till 1 in the morning. I can't do that. That's not going to happen. That's not going to work. That's not going to work. I can't get back at 3 in the morning. I can't do it. I didn't even need dinner. I needed to go back and make dinner. So I had to leave, and I thought I handled that. Honestly, it was a little nice because the second you enter into the overtimes, you never know when the game's going to end. The game can go for 3 more
periods.
Especially
in hockey.
Oh, the game could go for 3 more periods. You're going to have the 15-minute intermissions in between overtimes. I thought I made a business decision. I thought it honestly paid off, too, because I was able to see the Marchand goal at the end of second overtime.
It worked out perfectly, and I feel like you got the best of both worlds. You know, you were there for the entire game, so you felt the atmosphere. You were there with the home team, with the fans. And then you got to see the most intense, the most anxious part of the game at home comfortably, and you still got to wake up at a decent time the next day, not going to bed too late. Whereas if you had to drive from sunrise, that's about an hour and a half trip.
See, that's a judgment
call. Well done.
Call.
Well played.
That's a judgment call. And I got lucky there because I was able to see the actual game-winning goal and most of the second overtime. But when these hockey games get into overtime after overtime, it gets really difficult to stay it because it's just so long.
There was 17 seconds left in that third period before the tying goal came.
Yeah.
17 seconds. And when they tie the game in third period, there's still the intermission in between that third period and overtime.
See, that's what
I
thought.
That's about 15, 20 minutes.
What was it? 4-3? 3-4? It was 3-4 when I was getting up to leave. And I was like, all right, I'm going to get ahead on this. I do not think Edmonton's going to score. And I had it on my phone when I was walking through the corridor. And then they scored. And I'm in the corridor. Everybody's getting pissed off in the arena. And you're thinking, oh, do I go back? Do I go back? Do I go back? No, we're going. Because then you got the 20-minute intermission to get ahead of yourself on the road. And then you probably got to follow the entire overtime on the car ride.
And you got to listen to the game on these very airways, ESPN 106.3, where we have the game. So you didn't miss much.
No, I did not. I handled that properly. And I thought the game would be over. But the fact, if I stuck around, that would have been a rough Saturday morning if I got back at 2:30 on a Saturday morning getting back from a watch party with the team. Had a great time, but once it gets into overtime, it's free-for-all. It's free-for-all. Let's talk about that series a little bit because sitting there now at 1-1 coming back to Sunrise for Game 3, which is coming up tomorrow night, we have another potentially all-time classic series. We've had three overtime periods. We've had, 15 goals? 14 goals in two games?
16.
You've seen McDavid. You've seen Draisaitl. You've seen Bobrovsky and Skinner slip up. You've seen Marchand have his playoff heroics.
Sam Bennett, great playoff.
Sam Bennett. You've seen the big-time players make big-time plays. It has been a bizarre two games. And I don't know where I lean now because part of me thinks that Edmonton's going to come right down to Florida and steal one of the two.
It's tough. This is like a continuation of last year's Stanley Cup final where it went to game seven. It almost feels like we're at game 10 of those two series.
And whereas last year was the tale of whoever's hot at the right time because they each won three games in a row.
Right.
This is more of, we're playing neck and neck the entire way.
Match. It's about who makes that mistake last.
Who will make the crucial mistake? Very curious. Yannick Sinner stole set one against Carlos Alcaraz, was able to break him in the 10th game, 6-4 first set. About an hour that took. So we got a long one, a barn burner in the French Open. But Stanley Cup, I was Edmonton in six. I think Edmonton's not only going to win, I don't think it will go set. That was my pre-series prediction, was Edmonton in six. And winning in Sunrise, too. Because I thought that would have been like that poetic justice that they're looking for. Now I'm leaning that this is going to be a seven-game series. Part of me thinks that this is going to be a seven-game, and seventh game is going to be an overtime. Because these teams are neck and neck the entire way right now. That first period of game two, where you saw five goals before you could even blink, was ludicrous. It was ridiculous. The amount of sporadic offense that you could see from either of these teams, both these teams are Stanley Cup champion good, and now Edmonton's got their hands full with losing a home game in the first two. I'm very curious to see how the rest of this goes, and especially in Sunrise, it's a long way to travel.
Very long travel.
Very long travel. But my overall theme of the series is Florida wants to be a dynasty and McDavid's looking for his Gretzky moment. Those are the two sides. And you want to add to that, Canada wants a cup.
I think that's a very big one too.
Canada wants a cup. McDavid personally needs his Gretzky moment. Sidney Crosby had one. Wayne Gretzky had one. Ovechkin had one. All these guys had their moments. McDavid's looking for that. Canada hasn't won a cup since the Montreal Canadiens did in 1993. This is going to be, there's a lot riding for Edmonton here. And also, this is the team that beat them in seven last year, that they fell down 3-0 to. So this, there's a lot riding on that front. And then the other side, if you're the Florida Panthers, you go to three straight Stanley Cup finals, you win one of them. Is that viewed as a success or a failure? It's almost viewed as a missed opportunity more so than a celebration of how good they were.
Especially when you really analyze how good this Florida Panthers team is. Because the Oilers, I mean, they're a great
team. That team only got one cup in the first three?
Right. The difference between the Oilers and the Panthers is McDavid. McDavid is the best player on the ice. But take away McDavid, you know, Florida Panthers are overwhelmingly the better team from top to bottom. Goalkeeping, from the attacking, the defensively. So it's very interesting. That point is very interesting because it's a great point. You know, if the Florida Panthers do only get one, they had a great opportunity to get multiple Stanley Cups.
And they're not going anywhere. So you never know if they'll be back next year. But I'm sitting here thinking, they got steamrolled by Vegas 2 years ago. Fine. The team wasn't necessarily completely solidified then. But now, if you split with Edmonton and only go one of the three, part of you, I think, if you're a Florida Panther fan, has got to think of the missed opportunity more so than the celebration of getting the three straight finals after all that lack of playoff success the previous 20 years.
Especially when you pick up a player like Marchand, who's playing, I believe it's on the third line.
Yeah,
a luxury.
You pick up Marchand, Seth Jones. You got all these great players sitting there, and these guys are not going anywhere. You got a bunch of guys that are entering the primes of their careers. It's a masterclass in constructing a roster. But you got to capitalize. So there's a lot riding on Florida, not only defending the cup, which is hard to do in the NHL, but number two is showing something in the idea that, hey, like, we want to make this feel like we took all we could. Because if you drop one, and then all of a sudden, this is no guarantee that you'll be back here next year. There's no guarantee that you'll be able to run through the Eastern Conference yet again. It's a likelihood. It's not a guarantee. You're not going to be in the Stanley Cup final every year. And Tampa Bay is going to say that two cups nonstop. Two cups. And I know the Florida fan hates when Tampa Bay says that. Two cups. You got to shut them up. So a lot riding here.
I believe they were back-to-back, too, yep. If I'm not mistaken.
After game two, Damian, where do you lean here? You think Florida still?
Yeah, I think Florida is still the better team.
Is this going to be a seven-game series?
Absolutely. I think it'll definitely go to game seven, but in the end, it'll be Florida. I think them stealing one in Edmonton was huge, especially in the circumstances, going to overtime those two games. They had the lead in the second game. Edmonton tied it up, and they ended up still winning in overtime. I think that was huge for the momentum. And coming back to Sunrise, I could see Edmonton winning one. It's definitely going to game seven, but at the end of the day, Florida Panthers are going to pull it off. And like you said, this is the opportunity for the Florida Panthers to claim that dynasty.
Is two out of three a dynasty?
I believe it's the beginning of one.
Yeah. Because the chapter's not finished.
Correct.
They might be back. You know, you get to four straight Stanley Cups or five, you get three cups in 6 years. That's a dynasty.
You win this one, you give yourself 2 year window to win the next one. I don't think they would have to win them back to back.
Yeah, you got to think Chicago. Chicago didn't win them back to
back. Correct. But if they win this one, it gives them a 2 year window to win one more. And now we can start considering it a dynasty.
I'd like to see that. I lean Edmonton here. I do. I think Edmonton's got a little magic. And I think that best player, they got the best two players on the ice, Andrew Seidel and McDavid. That best player on the ice, I think, will make a difference. And I think that that team is on a mission. You're going to have to give complete, and Florida, to their credit, they don't get phased, especially with how deep they are. But Oilers are going to give them all they can handle. This is going to be this is probably going to be a seven-game series. And that seventh game will be in Edmonton. That's Damian Perez, Colin Russo. It's Sunday Huddle presented by Hard Rock Bet. On the flip side of things, we're going to take a couple picks. Maybe we'll live bet the French Open right now as the second set just got going. We got game two of the NBA final. We got game three of the Stanley Cup coming up tomorrow night. We got some MLB action. We got the college baseball. We got a lot to touch on and a lot to sprinkle some action on. Stick around for it as we close out the program next. It's Sunday Huddle presented by Hard Rock Bet right here on ESPN 106.3.
Philly 88, Dice right 52, Orlando right HD.
This is Sunday Huddle with Colin Russo, presented by Hard Rock Bet.
Sinner just broke Alcaraz to the second game of the second set. Alcaraz looks a little frazzled here as Sinner is now taken into the driver's seat of that second set. And the French Open final going on right now on TNT. It's Sunday Huddle presented by Hard Rock Bet on ESPN 106.3 with Colin Russo and Damian Perez. Well, it was announced this week, the 2025 Boca Raton Bowl officially announced. It's kicking off its 12th year this year. It's Tuesday, December 23rd, 2 p.m. That's down at FAU Stadium in Boca. Game's going to air on ESPN. It's going to have two of the biggest and best teams from the group of five. They'll battle it out for the chance at the title. And more information can be found at BocaRatonBowl.com. Follow along on Twitter at Boca Bowl or on Facebook.com/Boca Bowl for more updates as we inch closer to football season. The Boca Raton Bowl, the 2025 Boca Raton Bowl. Again, it's Tuesday, December 23rd at FAU Stadium. All right, Damian, Alcaraz is in some trouble here. So I don't know how I feel about this. I want this to be a five-setter. I know Alcaraz likes to get himself into trouble. You can't get yourself into trouble against the world number one, who is, you know, won two straight Grand Slams.
He just looks so sharp. You know, Sinner just looks like the better tennis player today. And I know Alcaraz, defending champion, it's tough to repeat, especially against the number one. And when Sinner's looking as good as he is today. Yeah, but with that being said, I think Alcaraz money line is at great value if you have the guts.
Yeah, Alcaraz is frazzled right now. He is frazzled right now. He needs to lock in. And he's like Nadal in the sense where he likes to get himself into a hole and then claw his way out. But again, Jannik Sinner's playing the best tennis of his career. The last 20 points, 15-5 in favor of Jannik Sinner. So he's got to lock in, so to speak. All right, it's time for us to lock in. And let's place a couple games against the spread. Let's pick a couple games. Let's blitz the book presented by Hard Rock Bet. Blitz the book presented by Hard Rock Bet. Go download that app today in the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store. Hard Rock's the best because you can put as little as $1, turn it into a serious payday, or put as little as $50. Somebody put a $50 home run parlay and they turned it into a $35,000 win last month. You can swing for the fences on your next big baseball bet with the MLB in the thick of the regular season right now. Or you could do player props. You could put together complicated parlays. Or if you don't even know what to bet, go to the Discover page, see what other users put together, and you can tap and tag along. It is that easy, that quick on the Hard Rock Bet app. Or do the Battle of the Bets, which is what they have on the app on Hard Rock, where you can put $1, and then there's a big pot. Usually, it's over $250,000 in bonus bets, and you just got to take a side. So whether it's over, under, you got to take a win, a loss. You got to take whether it's going to be over 108 points for the Pacers or under 108 points for the Pacers. You take either side. You put as little as $1. If you win, you get your cash winnings with your bet, and you get a piece of the pot with those $250,000 in bonus bets. But that's Hard Rock Bet. It's offered by the Seminole Tribe of Florida. Must be 21 plus and physically present in Florida. The wager terms and conditions apply. Consider by gambling. Call 1-888. Admit it. All right, Damian, let's talk about it. Let's do a little Hard Rock Bet. Let's make a couple picks here.
Let's do it.
Should we live bet the French Open?
I have Alcaraz moneyline from before the match started, and I'll be honest with you.
What were the odds before the match?
-105. He was actually the underdog. Sinner was -115. It was basically a pick 'em. But -105 Alcaraz.
Alcaraz is +375 at the moment.
Yeah, I mean that's beautiful value. You think a player like Alcaraz is always has a chance. He's always in the match, so it's great value. But like I said, I have his money line before the match started, and I'm kind of worried.
You got to take the value there. I'm doing +375.
I agree.
I'm doing the +375. All right, let's take a couple picks. Let's start with game two of the NBA Finals tonight. The Thunder. The money's going on the Thunder because it used to be 10. Now it's -11 in favor of Oklahoma City. Mind you, Oklahoma City is good at responding after a loss. It's the same team that beat Denver by about 45 points after the game one loss. Damian, what do you say here?
I think OKC is going to win this game, but I don't see them covering 11. I think the Pacers keep it close. They're not a team that, you know, I don't think they're going to just punt the game like the Nuggets did. I think Rick Carlisle is going to have them ready to play this game. There's been a long layoff, so Both teams are going to show up today. It'll be a close game, but OKC will pull it off. But give me Pacers plus 11.
You know they're plus 400 to win the game?
Mike was all over that yesterday.
I would take the plus 11. I already have a plus 400 essentially. But plus 400 straight up to win the game?
It's not a bad line.
That's not a bad line at all. That is pretty ridiculous.
Especially after seeing how game one went. I'm shocked that they have it at plus 400 and plus 11, frankly, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. I think that is kind of a criminal line for a team that's up 1-0 in the series, plus 400 in game two. Let's go to the NHL. We'll do game three, which is tomorrow, because we could do it early. Edmonton is plus one, is technically with the plus 1.5 on the goal spread. They're plus 120 to win. Florida's minus 140 to win. The over-under is set at 6.5. Damien, I love the over here.
I was going to say, how do you not
too
take
much
the
offense?
Over?
There's been too much offense.
These last two games have each had, I think it was 7 and 9 respectively. So I love the over in this game.
All right. I like the over as well. 6.5 is our over under that we'll pick. An MLB pick today. So take a look around. We got a packed MLB slate. Of course, you could do the obvious one and take Boston and New York. Boston was able to kind of rumble back last night in terms of guys on the mound. With that third game,
you got
tied at
1-1.
Yeah, and you got Skeens pitching today. So you got a lot to follow, a lot to look forward to. They got Hunter Dobbins and Rodon on the mound for the Yankees.
Rodon has had a great season.
Mm-hmm. The Oakland A's are in that AAA ballpark playing the Baltimore Orioles. They're plus 120.
What happened to the A's, man?
You know, they were 22-20. And they went 2-20. They're 5-22.
I remember having
games.
A conversation with you on how well the A's were doing this year. And since that conversation, it's been like a free fall.
We got to stop talking about the A's. All right. So now, that's just a bad luck. I thought about taking the A's today, but I think I'm going to take the over in runs between Boston and New York.
Yeah.
It's been an offense fest the last two games. It's only 8.5. So I'm leaning on the side that we are going to see some offense tonight. And that will conclude my four-bet parlay. Carlos Alcaraz now at 325, not at 375 to win. I don't know why that's changed, because he's down 3-0 in the second set. Damien, that is my conclusion. I'll take Pacers plus 11, Carlos Alcaraz to win against Jannik Sinner, and he's down basically a set and a half at the moment, so I'm a little nervous about that.
I love it, but that must be that must pay pretty well. What's the odds?
Plus 3,300.
Yeah, there you go.
Plus 3,300.
There you go.
So, you know, a $5 wager.
150.
Well, yeah, 170.
Beautiful.
Sign me up for that. So you got to hope that Carlos Alcaraz lock in. Channel your inner Nadal.
Not too much risk, but excitement all day long.
A considerable amount of risk with Alcaraz, because this might be over here pretty soon.
Yeah, but it's $5 at the end of the day. You know, it's not going to make
that's
or break
why
you,
have, you. That's why you do it. That's why you have some fun.
Yes, sir.
Damien, do you have a baseball pick that you're going
to
take?
I mentioned it. I like Paul Skeens. I know they're playing the Phillies, and the Phillies have had a great start to the season, but anytime you got Paul Skeens,
so you're
got
gonna
a
bet,
chance.
You're going to bet on the Pirates actually giving them some run support and helping them out and getting a win out of this?
I do. 3 wins in their last 5. Why not? If they're going to do it, it's with Paul Skeens. Give me the Pittsburgh Pirates, who are actually, I'm looking at the line now, I thought they'd be underdogs. They're actually the favorite.
All right. Interesting. Alcaraz, by the way, has shifted back to 375. So something must have been a mistake, because now he's plus 375. It has now turned into plus 3,500 odds. But that concludes our Blitz the Book presented by Hard Rock Bet. Sunday game for game two. Does it need to be at 8 o'clock?
No. And that's that was one of the first thing I said when I came in here. I was like, I don't understand why this game is at 8 o'clock on a Sunday.
This game could be at 3:30.
3:30. That's the perfect time. You know, you wake up, you're looking forward to that afternoon game two NBA final. But now we have to wait all the way till 8 p.m. And if the game is closed, does end up going to overtime, we're going to bed closer to 1 a.m.
Yeah, the funny part is there's no travel, and they've already had 2 days off.
It makes no sense why it's at 8 p.m. You try to make sense of it, and kind of like how you mentioned the scheduling, why is there such a long break? Why is the game at 8 p.m. today? It's just all around just very strange.
Put it at 6. It doesn't matter. Put it at 6.
Right.
Oklahoma City, I imagine that's Central time. It might be Mountain time. If that's the case, then they're an hour or two behind.
I didn't think of that.
That's a 5 p.m. start. There's nobody working on a Sunday. They could all get to the game. There's nobody working. Why does it need to be at 8 p.m.? That's very weird. Very weird. And even the games in Indiana, 8:30, start at 8. Do it 8. All right? Like, well, let Damien and I get to bed at a normal hour. I sound like such an old guy, but it's true. That's the that's the problem with the East Coast, yeah. is you got to deal with the start times.
Especially when during the regular season, you had the 10:30 starts. That was a grind.
My God, in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, that was a tough one.
You couldn't watch the Laker games because the Laker games started, and they started late, too. They started at 10:45.
Yeah.
I can watch the first half, maybe.
Granted, you didn't miss much in that Lakers series.
No.
But
just generally.
The principle.
The principle. When it was Warriors-Rockets and it started at 9:45, guys, I understand they're on the West Coast. We got to get those fans in the building. Start the game at 6 local time.
We'll find a happy medium.
Start the game at 6 local time. Find the happy medium. Yannick Sinner, Alcaraz 3-1 second set. I'm hoping that Alcaraz can get back in this because I want to watch a classic on clay.
He needs to break his set.
He needs to break him. I don't think he's broken him yet. And he hasn't broken his serve one time.
No momentum. I feel like he just hasn't had that like spur of momentum, which is huge for Alcaraz, a player who loves his emotions.
Yeah, he plays a lot into his emotions. Sinner serving now. Alcaraz needs to just get a taste. Make him bleed a little bit.
Get him frustrated a little. Like we saw yesterday in the Coco Gauff versus Sabalenka. Sabalenka just absolutely lost her head in
that
match.
I'm glad you brought that up. Coco Gauff, the first American in over a decade to win the French Open on the women's side of things. And Sabalenka goes post-match talking about how it wasn't that Coco beat her. It was that she made too many mistakes.
Bad look.
And that is why Coco Gauff won. She went on to say that Iga Swiatek, who is dominant on clay, who Sabalenka beat in the semifinal, she's like, oh, well, if Swiatek played, Swiatek would have beaten Gauff today.
What is
talk
her problem
about
with
losing
Coco?
With grace. There's one thing, and she was saying this on the court. God, there's nothing more psychotic than a tennis player that thinks the world is out to get them. Coco Gauff, on the other side of things, is one of the rare tennis players that isn't psychotic and isn't losing their minds every 5 seconds. Anyway, that's Damian Perez, Colin Russo with you saying so long on a Sunday edition of Sunday Huddle right here on ESPN 106.3.